in case you're just joining us, I'm just sitting in for Karima tonight. And it's great thus far. Hashtag Karima Brown Show, both on Twitter as well as on Facebook, if you guys want to get a hold of me there. And of course, we'll be taking your calls in the next, say, 25 minutes or so in the open line on 011-883-0702. And of course, 31702 for your SMSs. Hashtag Karima Brown Show, as I mentioned earlier on. And for those of you that are on WhatsApp, you can get a hold of us on 072-702-1702. Either a short voice note, alternatively, a short text message, straight and sharp to the point, on 072-702-1702. But on the line now, I have Pam Wilson as well as Robin Wolfson Foster, who will be chatting to us about this issue of child adoptions in South Africa as a challenges with regards to adoption. And that for me is a very important issue, especially if you look at the number of children that need homes in South Africa. Let me go to both Pam as well as Robin Wolfson Foster. Good evening to you. Let's start with Pam. Good evening, Pam. Of course, you are the communication spokesperson at the National Adoption Coalition of South Africa. Good evening to you, and thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Gershon, and thank you to you, and hello to your listeners.
Great one. And then Robin, of course, is with the children's rights. You're a children's rights activist from Becoming a Mum.
Hi, Gershon. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. If you don't mind, Robin, if we start with you, I mean, the adoption process itself is pretty frustrating and quite a long, lengthy process, is it not so?
Well, it has the reputation of being long and frustrating, but actually, interestingly, if you break it up into segments, you'll see that each process in itself is self-contained, and each part of the process is a specific length of time. So, for example, if you begin an adoption process, the first thing that happens is that you are screened to work out whether you should be a suitable adoptive parent or not. Mm. And actually, that part of the process, which is the most important part, if I'm honest, because obviously we don't want people to be adoptive parents if they have any evil intent towards the children, if they want to traffic them if they were pedophiles. That part can be as little as 2 to 3 months, depending on whether you go through a private social worker or an agency. And actually, once you are screened, then the matching that takes place depends on how specific you are about what kind of child you want. So if you say to your social worker, I will have any child of any age, and I would love to have any gender of child, and it's not a problem for me, then that the matching itself can also take place very quickly. So it's interesting. Those are the two very important parts of the process where a family is chosen for a child, and that family is considered to be acceptable. And in many cases, we know that that can take as little as 6 months, sometimes even shorter. The frustrating and difficult part of the process, unfortunately, is thereafter. And that is the administrative part of the process. It's the legal part where you get an adoption order to say that you are legally the adoptive parents of the child. And it's the process of going through home affairs and changing the child's surname, getting a new birth certificate with a new ID number. And that part of the process is extremely lengthy in many cases and very frustrating for adoptive parents.
I hear what you're saying, and then, I mean, that has been the biggest complaint thus far. But I mean, Robin, just to bring you into the picture, Pam, to bring you into the conversation. I mean, I've looked at some of the statistics, and I mean, it's stark and quite frankly crazy that we've stuck with this long, lengthy administrative process, especially when you take into account the fact that we have about, 3,500 children or babies who get abandoned. And then those are that survive this abandonment, first and foremost. Second of all, when you look at the fact that there's nearly 500,000 children nationwide who are in foster care, and many of them are in need of being adopted. And unfortunately, inevitably, what we also find is that many of these children, once they reach a particular age, a particular threshold, they don't end up being adopted either, which makes life even more difficult for them. As a start, I mean, what Robin had outlined there is extremely problematic. I mean, what is the holdup? What is the issue? Why are we taking so long to get these children adopted?
Yeah, well, I think sadly, you know, we know that from about 2011 until now, the adoption, the number of adoptions done each year has almost halved. We were doing about 2,500 in 2011, and now we're doing about 1,200 a year. So there has been a decidedly big decrease in the number of adoptions being done. And I think it's, you know, partly due to the fact that we had a new Children's Act come in 2010, which brought about a whole of new administrative procedures in the adoption process, which is fine. It is a good piece of legislation, and some of those procedures are necessary and good. But unfortunately, they don't often have, you know, the departments who are administering the Children's Act or implementing it don't have the necessary experienced staff to implement it or capacity to implement it. So the processes can be very long and drawn out, and that can delay things considerably. And there's also sometimes not necessarily the buy-in from many of those departments in terms of the importance of children finding permanent homes and the preference for foster care as opposed to adoption. So those are some of the things that often stall the process. As Robin said, the initial phase could go quite smoothly, but it's once the child is placed with the adopters that the difficulty starts coming in and that the delays.
So, I mean, if we look at that situation, I'm looking at some of the stats here at the moment. The South African White Paper on Families reveals that nuclear families make up 23.2% of families. So when you say nuclear families, I would assume that that would be the traditional heteronormative mommy, daddy, and 2.5 children, along with three generational families make up 16.1%. So I presume that's where granny... usually grandma's looking after the children, 11.1%, and you know, childless married couples equate to 6.4%. So single parent families are 11.1%, and then obviously childless married couples make up 6.4%. So in other words, you have 6.4% of the population that could potentially adopt a child. That's the first point. Second to that is that they could exercise by all rights their right not to adopt a child. And within these categories, what we're not measuring, as an example, are same-sex couples, who I presume wouldn't necessarily be included in the nuclear families makeup there. I mean, is that, you know, do we see same-sex couples being given and afforded an opportunity, an equal opportunity on top of that, to be able to adopt children?
Absolutely. There's no discrimination at all within the Children's Act of who can adopt in terms of same-sex couples.
Sure.
Just to add to what I was saying before, in terms of some of the issues that also possibly causing the drop in numbers, is, you know, that there's a decidedly lack of knowledge in the community about how to go about the adoption process and trying to find the information surrounding adoption, who to contact, etc. And it's bodies such as the National Adoption Coalition that are trying very consistently to raise awareness in communities about where to go and how to adopt a child. There are also a lot of social and cultural barriers against adopting still in the community, that adopting a child is not born to you, adopting a boy child is going to carry the family name, might anger the ancestors. So there are a lot of issues around that, which again, the National Adoption Coalition is trying to break down some of those barriers and to stress the importance of children finding homes, and that it's okay to adopt a child, even if it is of a different race or a different ethnic group. And then obviously also that the particular economic times that we're living in at the moment, that it's, you know, all families are facing huge financial challenges with the economic situation, and making the decision to adopt and bring another child into the family is quite a huge decision for some families. But adoption itself, the process of adoption itself, doesn't necessarily have to be costly, and many of the adoption organizations often render services free of charge or on a sliding scale, so to accommodate those families who are struggling to make ends meet.
I hear you, and I mean, those are the external factors, or, you know, for lack of a better term, the external factors then that affect people. But I mean, coming back to you, Robin, I mean, you were saying that the That the process is quite lengthy, it is quite cumbersome. Does it also have a role to play where, we might be considering that, listen, there is this child that we know of in foster care, or maybe a child that we have been taking care of in the foster care environment, might be a family member or whatever the case is, and we'd like to adopt this child. However, because of the administrative bungle, the administrative process that you have to undergo, the difficulties that you have to face, I mean, does that become a disincentive where you say that, listen, okay, fine, I'm hanging up my boots, I'm not going to be part of this process? I mean, do you have cases where people, quite frankly, just give up the process, which I'm sure is not an easy thing either?
Sure, I think that that does happen in some instances, but I do think that there is a tremendous value in providing permanency for a child. And adoption does do that in a way that, unfortunately, foster care can't, because foster care orders need to be renewed biannually. And we know also that the foster care system is very, very bloated at the moment. There are a lot of children in that system, which means that the processes are not working as well as they possibly could. So therefore, if people are in a place to be able to adopt and give that permanency to a child, I think it's really worth going through the process. And as I mentioned, what is really important to remember is that by the time you get into that admin, which is lengthy and difficult, that child is already in your care. That child is already a part of your family. And I think I'm an adoptive parent myself. I think most adoptive parents would say that they would call over broken glass for their children at that point. So I think what we're saying is, yes, it is lengthy, and partly it needs to be because we need to protect children. There are other things that you've just literally got to navigate, and I think it is worth navigating for the sake of that child.
I hear what you're saying, and both of you, Pam, as well as Robin, you have pointed out obviously the protection element, which is obviously key, and for, you know, in law we even have in the best interest of the child, which is sort of a guiding principle when it comes to anything child rights related. And I think that there's something wrong with you if you don't sort of agree with that, that motto or that mantra. Mm. But what my concern, though, is, are we looking purely at administrative and legal processes being this lengthy in the interests of the child and in the interests of the protection of the child? Or is it a case of saying that, listen, there is another administrative bungle? Because, I mean, one of the things that I saw that is of concern is this letter that is required. It's the law requires that the letter, that a letter from the head of the Department of Social Development that recommends the child's adoption accompanies an adoption application. This letter is supposed to take 21 days to retrieve, but it takes longer due to some provinces duplicating the work of the court. So what I'm getting at is that if we are going to have administrative bungles like this, where people are duplicating work or they're dragging out the process unnecessarily, of course we're going to be faced with a situation whereby it's no longer a cumbersome process in the interest and the protection of the child, but rather a cumbersome process because of administrative bungling. Robin, I'll give you a chance first to respond. Pam, I'd like to hear your response as well on that one.
Well, I'm glad you went to me first, because I think I can be a bit more controversial than Pam can on this. And I think the truth is that some of that bungling is deliberate. We do know, as Pam mentioned, that there is an anti-adoption sentiment amongst some government officials. They feel very strongly that children should be kept in their family unit or in their extended family or in their community. And I think adoption advocates would agree with that 100%. If family reunification is an option for a child, then you would say, yes, go ahead. Mm. But going back to what you said about the best interest of a child, sometimes it isn't in the best interest of the child. And obviously some cases, for example, when there is abandonment, there is no possibility of family reunification. And then what we would like is the process of adoption to be expedited, because we know that a child is incredibly vulnerable in their first 1,000 days in terms of the way that they neurologically develop, in the way that they attach to their caregivers. And we feel that early placement is extremely important for the well-being of children. So where there is no possibility of them being placed back into their families, my feeling specifically is that we need those the administrators, the people who are involved with the process, to get on board and to say, yes, we would like possibly something different for this child, but it isn't first prize for them. And first prize for them is for them to be placed in an adoptive family as soon as possible. And yes, as you mentioned, unfortunately, we are seeing in some provinces, particularly, for example, KwaZulu-Natal, where adoptions are taking place extremely slowly, where there's a lot of pushback against adoption. And personally, my feeling is that in many cases, that isn't in those children's best interest.
Sure. And then from your side there, Pam, I mean, the scenario that I painted, and I mean, looking at what the situation currently is, I mean, what's your comment on that one?
Well, I think I agree with Robin totally. I mean, I think as an adoption community and role players in adoption, we're constantly working very hard to navigate these challenges and to address these challenges, because we really feel that in so many instances the child's best interests are lost completely in a whole bureaucratic administrative process without any regard to what is going to be best for this child. And I think that is the most frustrating thing for us, is that we really feel a child should come first and their interests first, and that there should be some flexibility and some cognizance of what is going to be best for the child in the long run, and not hold things up and that keep children away from families while we're waiting for letters and for transfer orders and all sorts of things that take forever to address within the government departments. So yes, we are working on it all the time. We're constantly addressing these challenges, but it is going to take a long time to change the system, I'm afraid. But we really do believe that, you know, children belong in families, and the quicker they can join that family, the better, their permanent home. And we're trying to facilitate that at every sort of turn we can. The National Adoption Coalition has actually launched this year for the World Adoption Day. We've launched Experience the Magic of the Right Fit. That is our campaign for 2018, where we're saying that not all families are perfect, but you know there's a child out there waiting to join a family and to make that family perfect and complete, and waiting for the right family for themselves. And we really are sort of trying to spread awareness in communities that there are ways to adopt a child for everyone, that everyone has an opportunity to adopt. They just need to know where to go and to look at the right places for information. For instance, such as the National Adoption Coalition website, they could find all the information they need there to adopt in their various areas, the resources that are available in those areas.
And I mean, I'm looking at, so you know, and I'm going to rehash a lot of the statistics that I'd mentioned earlier, but I just want to bring to light what the crisis is at the moment. So according to the South African Child Gauge report, there were about 3.1 million orphan children in South Africa in 2016, right? Mm-hmm. And that is a massive, massive proportion. If you think about it, that's almost 6% of the population, of the national population. 3,500 babies are abandoned each year. These are children that survive abandonment. Mm-hmm. And then if we, you know, take it a step further, I mentioned it earlier, on nearly 500,000 children nationwide are then within the custody of foster care. Now, Pam, I mean, with those, you know, with that image, the immediate thing that one would assume is that government needs to enact legislative changes, and that tends to sort of almost be the knee-jerk reaction when it comes to these crises that we face on a regular basis. I mean, is that what is needed yet? Do we need to change legislation? Do we need a review again? Or is the legislation in place and there is sufficient protection, but the problem is the implementation aspect?
As I said before, the legislation is good. I don't think we need to change the legislation. You know, the processes and the steps involved in the adoption process are sound to protect children, but it's the implementation of it and the attitude, I think, of the people implementing it towards the various organizations who are conducting adoptions and trying to find families for children, permanent families. Then it's not always a priority for them, and children's needs and children's best interests get waylaid while, you know, everyone debates how long they can take to issue an order, or you know, how long they can keep a child waiting to join the family. For instance, children are babies are matched with their families, and the family starts visiting the child. But in order to place a child in that, from the children's home with that family, you need to get an order from the Department of Social Development. But it can take 6 weeks to get that order, because they first have to have a meeting to discuss your report, to decide whether this child should go to this family. Mm-hmm. And that is not a bad thing. I'm not saying that they don't need to be involved and that they don't need to monitor, but they need to make that a short process so that the family who is introduced to the child maybe only visits for 1 week and then that, or 2 weeks, and the child gets placed, not 6 weeks. Because by the end of that, the child, every time the family visits, they cry and get very upset when the family leave, because now they've already started bonding to the family. But, you know, everyone has a different view of what in that situation is in the best interest of the child. We believe the child, the quicker the child goes to the family, the better. But, you know, the government department has to follow its processes, and they don't always have the availability of staff or the date for the particular discussion around this particular case. It's delayed. And as I said before, the child's interest gets lost in the process.
I mean, I hear what Pam is saying there, Robin, but in the very same vein, you know, I'm listening to the story of the tragedy of, you know, this child constantly crying and bursting into tears when the family leave after the visitation. It's a six-week process. I mean, it's extremely traumatic. Same question to you. I mean, is it a legislative issue or is it policy? Because at the very same time, in as much as Pam, what you said might be the legislative process, I'm sure that Robin, you would agree with me that when it comes to laws, when it comes to legislative processes, these can be changed in accordance with what is the best, in the best interest of the child.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I tend to agree with Pam that we've actually got a very good Children's Act. The problem, from my perspective, is our strategic priorities as far as child protection is concerned. And I feel that if you allow your decisions to be governed by either traditional beliefs or cultural beliefs or your own personal feelings towards whether adoption is a good solution as far as child protection is concerned or not, then even the best piece of legislation is not going to be implemented accurately or well. And I think that is my biggest concern, is it's the policies and the processes, as Pam mentioned, but it's more what we value in terms of child protection and what it is that we are prioritizing in terms of child protection. And unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, because a lot of government officials would rather work for 2 or 3 years to organize a family reunification, or would rather place a child in impermanent foster care than place a child in an unrelated adoptive family, what we see is that that even with good legislation, it isn't being implemented in a way that I believe is actually affording those children the life that they actually need. And, you know, unfortunately, we're in a situation in this country where by the time a child is 4 or 5, the chances of them being adopted nationally are very small. And if you have spent all of that time trying to work a different strategy, and you get to the point at that point where you say, well, maybe this child should be adopted, often they don't have those options, which is, for me, an absolute tragedy, because those children end up in long-term institutional care. And I think one thing that we are very certain about is that institutional care is not an optimal environment for children. Even loving, nurturing institutions are not places where children should be growing up.
That for me is an absolute shock. I mean, as a final question to leave it on, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth. So again, Pam, I'll start with you on this one, that unfortunately what is not at fault here, what is not the problem, doesn't seem to be the legislative or the legal framework, but much rather how people implement policy and how they go about the adoption process, where, I don't know, officials' personal views from a cultural, familial, social, whatever other perspective you can imagine, that's what bleeds into the system rather than an informed decision based on psychology, sociology, and what even the law says in many instances. I mean, that's the picture I'm getting, that it's really not even a human bungling, I'm wasting my time and I'm wasting everyone's time and I'm lazy approach, but really that, I don't know, we're going to slow down this process because of how we feel about this whole process.
Yeah, I think you've sort of summed it up correctly, Gershwin. I think both Robin and I have kind of said very much the same thing. But I think, you know, we mustn't be too negative.
Yeah.
I think people, this should not stop people adopting. There are still children out there who are looking for families and are waiting for families and needing permanent homes. So, you know, obviously social workers try their very best to facilitate the process as quickly as possible and to make it as user-friendly and as easy as possible for adopters, and are there to support them through the process. So we would really still encourage families out there to come forward to adopt the children who are still waiting for homes.
I hear you. Thank you so much, Pam. All the best to you, okay?
Thanks so much.
Cheers. Robin, I mean, your final thoughts on that? Is my summation or my summary correct? I mean, obviously, with the disclaimer that Pam had added there, that we shouldn't be too negative about the process because we don't want to discourage people from embarking on something essential and something that gives you, you know, gives these children a new opportunity and gives parents an opportunity to raise a child and share love with a young person.
Absolutely. Well, in fact, I think in some ways it's actually helpful to know what you're dealing with, because I think there are a lot of people out there who just feel like it's a mire. It's just too complicated and too difficult, and they'll say it's bureaucracy and they'll say the system is broken. But actually, if you realize that what we're doing is we're trying to work with people's thoughts and beliefs and their heart feelings, and sometimes those are for adoption and sometimes those are against adoption, then I think it's actually in some ways easier to navigate because you know what you're dealing with. Mm. And I think my final thought would be to take my activist hat off and to put my adoptive mom hat on again. And just to say that I know personally that that battle was so worth it in our own family. Mm. I mean, my daughter is the most incredible blessing to us. She has just added life and joy to us in a way that I find astonishing and humbling and wonderful. And I feel very strongly that this is something that if you have a heart for adoption, don't walk into it lightly. Certainly consider it. Absolutely find the right resources. Go and make sure that you've got an accredited adoption agency or social worker who can work with you. But go for it. And really, when you do go for it, understand that it is the most life-transforming and the most wonderful process to be able to give a family to a child who's in need.
But don't expect it to be easy, though. Thank you so much.
Unfortunately not. No rainbows and unicorns, but yes, definitely worth it in the long run.
It's the movie Annie. That's what I blame it on. All the best.
Indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank
you so much for having me on the show.
Only a pleasure. It was absolutely a pleasure chatting to you, Robin. Thank you and good luck.
Okay.
That was Robin Wolfson-Foster, children's rights activist from Becoming a Mum.